Track 2. A few years ago, a group called London Beyond Sight commissioned many well-known personalities to record their thoughts about a landmark or a hidden gem in London. We think these make great listening, and they really are very interesting. So Just Talk will include many of these in the future. We're going to start by welcoming Alistair Stewart, the ITV news presenter, to talk about the Cenotaph.
Maybe it's because I'm a Londoner that I love London so.
Hello, I'm Alistair Stewart, and I'm a journalist, and I read the news for ITV. I've chosen the Cenotaph, the chunk of white-grey, unpolished stone that is the United Kingdom's National War Memorial, for the perfect way I think its minimalism fits it for that role, and also for what it means to me, both professionally and personally. The Cenotaph is at the lower end of Whitehall, the half-mile-wide thoroughfare lined with government offices, which connects Trafalgar Square to the north with Parliament Square to the south, parallel with the Thames, just to the east. The monument stands proudly in the middle of the two-way road, as if on an island in its own river of traffic and pedestrians, like the support for a non-existent bridge. Because of its position, it's in full view of many of the buildings at the hub of British power. The Ministry of Defence and Downing Street are both close by. You can reach the Cenotaph safely via the traffic lights and pedestrian crossings at each end of its island. And unless there's a ceremony going on, you should be able to move round it and touch it. Just so you know, it's centred on a shallow, pale stone, three-tiered dais. There are usually poppy wreaths on the top level, and against the sides of the monument itself are real flags. The Cenotaph is a four-sided column, 35 feet high on an oblong base, 15 feet by 8.5 feet, aligned long ways down the street. It's like a tapering stack of huge rectangular blocks, the footprint of each a few inches smaller than the one beneath, resulting in a terraced effect. You could say it's a cross between a ziggurat and an Art Deco skyscraper. But to me, it has something peculiarly First World War about it, reminding me of an empty gun emplacement. There are three distinct sections. The bottom section ends at head height, with horizontal lines of bulge and groove like cornicing. The central section is by far the tallest, and the whole monument is topped by what looks like a sarcophagus. Cenotaph in Greek literally means empty tomb. The ancient Greeks believed a proper tomb burial was essential, even if the actual body was missing. And it's a Greek architectural tradition that's partly responsible for another of the cenotaph's features. The way it seems to be solidly rooted to the spot, yet at the same time soaring upwards. The four sides of the column at first appear to be vertical, but in fact they lean, almost imperceptibly, toward each other. If they continued on up, they would eventually meet 1,000 feet into the sky, and they are, even more imperceptibly, convex. The sheer surfaces of the cenotaph are almost entirely free from adornment. What little there is mostly on the shorter sides, facing Parliament Square to the south and Trafalgar Square to the north. Inscribed on each of these sides, just above the cornicing, centred one above the other, are three words, in simple 5-inch square uppercase letters. The Glorious Dead. Above, at the top of the tall central section, is a circular laurel wreath in relief, 5 feet in diameter, carved as if suspended between two roundels by thin ribbon. Directly above each wreath are two lines of Roman numerals. On the south end, MCMXIV, 1914. And on the north, MCMXIX, 1919. The dates of the First World War. The cenotaph was designed by Sir Edwin Lutyens in 1919 to commemorate the British and Commonwealth servicemen and women who sacrificed their lives in that war. Its terrible simplicity is in such extraordinary disproportion to the loss and horror it represents. Literally, millions sent to their deaths. And I find so poignant the way it rises up without apology in honest recognition of something that went wrong. Not in some out-of-the-way field, but at the very heart of where we do our politics and crown our kings and queens. On the long west and east sides are the dates of the Second World War. They were added later, but scarcely interrupt the bare severity of Lutyens' original concept. Protruding slightly from the stone are the smooth, curved edges of seashells. Millions of years ago, these lay on a subtropical seabed, which eventually hardened into this limestone, known as Portland Stone, after the place in Dorset where it's quarried. The cenotaph contrasts starkly with the elaborate styles of the architecture around it, but its stone gives it a sense of belonging, echoing the Portland Stone of the National Gallery and other buildings nearby. Portland Stone is both resilient and easy to work. But Lutyens had another reason for choosing it. It had built the British Empire. Against each long side of the monument, evenly spaced as if standing to attention, are three 15-foot gold-plated flagpoles, their bases in the cornicing at head height. From each hangs a huge, colourful flag representing a service of the British Armed Forces. The flags include one that's pale blue with a red, white and blue roundel, the ensign of the Royal Air Force, my father's flag. RAF Group Captain Jimmy Stewart had trained as a navigator in Canada, catching the end of the Second World War, flying mosquitoes over Germany. It was whilst he was in the RAF that he met my mother, a young Wren telephonist. I remember great arguments with my father over nuclear disarmament when I was a lefty student wanting to ban the bomb. In 1989, when I covered the Berlin Wall coming down, I had to admit he was right. We'd got to this point without killing each other, after all. The flags and poppy wreaths also remind me of the tremendously moving gathering every November when the cenotaph becomes the focal point of the National Service of Remembrance. The monarch, Prime Minister, former Prime Ministers, party leaders, the Foreign Secretary, leaders of the different faiths, and thousands of representatives from military and civilian callings all come together in comradeship to pay their respects. After the ceremony, the mood lightens as the massed bands strike up the Veterans March Past. This is organised by the Royal British Legion, the nation's custodian of remembrance. My mother was closely involved with its work, providing support to service personnel past and present and their families. And it's the charity that I've been associated with the longest. I help with fundraising, particularly for younger people, widows from the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, and children whose parents didn't come back. So for me, the cenotaph has deeply personal resonances. It's a monument of national significance, but I think its brilliance is that, at the same time, we can each make it our own. Lutyens could have given us a fussy victory arch, smothered in faces and names of great battles. But instead, we have the antithesis of that. Minimalist, even abstract. Architecture and sculpture at their absolute best. It's all about what it's not. Our minds are cleared by its purity. We focus without distraction on the enormity of war. It invites us in, providing a space for our own thoughts and recollections of loved ones. It's what we bring to it that ensures those we remember with such gratitude and affection are never forgotten. It shivers my spine. It brings truth to the pledge. We will remember them.
Thank you, Alistair. Yes, we will remember them.